Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Welcome back, friends, to the She Said Project Podcast. I am your host, Jeanette Jerzyk. With me in the studio is co-founder of She Said, Carrie Rosso. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Jeanette.
How are you today?
Fantastic.
Ready to share another empowering story with the women of our community?
I am, and even better, more communities.
Beyond our community and beyond. And that is the power of the She Said Project podcast. For our friends who don't know, That's What She Said is a live storytelling event that was born in Champaign, Urbana, in the heart of central Illinois. And we have spent over 5 years sharing women's stories, the love, the loss, the happy, the sad, all the feels. And so now through the She Said Project podcast, we have this great opportunity to share these stories with you and talk about how everyone has a story and every one of those stories has an impact on the women in your lives.
And I have to tell you, today's guest is most stories. When I hear a great story in my community about women, the first sentence is about the great thing. And the second sentence almost always starts with, so Becca Guyette was there.
Are you referring to Becca Guyette?
The Becca Guyette.
Absolutely. She is very well known in her community for the work that she does, her philanthropy. I think she's on the line. Let's go ahead and bring her on the show. Becca, are you with us?
Here I am. As my little guy used to say when we played hide and seek, here my are.
Well, welcome, Becca, and thank you for spending some time with us today. Obviously, you've gone through the experience of sharing a personal story live on the stage. And then what's even more special is Becca was a special guest on our short-lived web series, That's What She Said, where we obviously saw an opportunity to share even more women's stories. And so, Becca, your name keeps coming up in these circles for a very good reason.
Right, because so many of the things that you talked about are universal. We all have mom stories or crazy mom things that our moms do and then that we repeat and pass on to the next generation. I can't open a container of Cool Whip without thinking of your mom, or Sunday morning when I want to skip out on church, I immediately think of her like,
Well, let's back this truck up and remind everyone, Becca shared a story called Everyone Should Have a Mexican Mother. So, Becca, what does that mean to you?
Well, it was really a way for me to kind of share my upbringing. And I've often thought, a lot of times when people ask, you know, well, why do you do this? Or how did you learn about that? Or what drew you to this? Or how did you develop this trait? It all stems from my mom. And so really, when I think of all aspects of my life, me as a parent, me as a wife, me as a, you know, philanthropist and someone who wants to support her community in all different ways, my friendships, everything, it really stems to what I watched and learned from my mother. So I wanted to share some stories about her with the audience.
And that's unique because so many women hide the fact that I have traits like my mother, and yet you stand loud and proud sharing that, you know, she's an important influence in your life.
Absolutely. More so the older I get.
If my girls grow up to be half as great as you or to admire me half as much as you admire your mom, I would be a happy, happy woman.
Thank you, Carrie.
And let's go to the live clip where Becca Guyette performed with the 2015 cast in the Champaign community, Everyone Should Have a Mexican Mother.
There are a few certainties in life. One of them is that everyone has a mother. I believe everyone should have a Mexican mother. Mexican mothers are generous. My mom lives 5 hours away and visits us monthly, sometimes unexpectedly. Now, you would expect a grandmother to show up with surprises for her grandchildren, which she does, but she takes it one step further. Every visit, she shows up with a large cooler full of food that she has my dad lug in, with a main dish, sometimes roast, sometimes tamales, and about half a dozen butter and cottage cheese containers, none of which contain butter nor cottage cheese, full of rice, beans, what have you. And that's just how she rolls. Not because she's necessarily planning on feeding anyone, but because she might need to feed someone. God forbid anyone leave this woman's presence hungry. True story. 2 months ago, we met up halfway between both our homes for a family funeral, and she told me she had new pillows for me in her trunk because she deemed my guest pillows unacceptable on her last visit. And I said, thank you. And she opens up her trunk. I said, what's in the box? There's a big box in there. She said, oh, just some pies I made. I said, let me see. There were 12 pies in this box. I said, Mom, why did you make those? She said, well, I wasn't sure they were going to have dessert for everyone at the luncheon after the funeral mass tomorrow. What? This was not our church. Mexican mothers are loyal. Now, loyalty means different things to different people. To my mother, it means a lifetime of devotion to those closest to her, even if they happen to be her ex-son-in-law. When my sister divorced her husband of 14 years, my mom had many concerns, of course, having been like a mother to him. But her predominant concern is that he was going to starve. That's a reasonable concern for a grown, self-sufficient man, right? So to show her concern, she would show up with food at his house, random times, maybe lunch, maybe dinner, using the key she had that he was afraid to ask for back. It wasn't until one of my nieces informed her that he was starting to date and it might not be welcome if she showed up unannounced that this occurred to be at all inappropriate. From that point on, she still made him food, but she at least announced her visit first. Mexican mothers are protective. We've all heard the saying, hell hath no fury. Try hell hath no fury like a Mexican woman who thinks her child is in danger. When my sister Yoli was in third grade, you know where I'm going with this, she came home and told my mom that her teacher had pulled her braid because she wasn't paying attention. Now, this was the early 80s. That kind of behavior didn't necessarily warrant parental intervention. This is my mom we're talking about. So next day, she holds her hand, walks her into school, walks up to the teacher and pulls her hair. Pulls her hair. If this behavior seems appropriate to you, you might be a Mexican mother. Mexican mothers are faithful. Growing up, our Catholic faith was a daily part of our lives. And after I went to college, my mom would still call and check in to make sure I was going to Mass. That made sense. But 20 years later, she still keeps this up. I can count on a call on Sunday mornings, about an hour before Mass begins. Just checking in, see what you're doing today. Sometimes I'll confess, you know, Mom, it's just really hectic around here. I don't think we're going to make it to Mass. Oh, it's okay. I understand. When I had all six of you kids to get around and out the door, it was a lot. I did it, but it was a lot. Cue to me motioning to my husband, get the kids dressed, get out the door. Once she called me on Ash Wednesday to make sure I was getting ashes, I said, you know, Mom, I was going to. It was pouring outside. I don't want to get soaked. And she said, it's okay, Mija. I understand. He died on the cross for you, but yeah. You probably don't want to get your shoes wet. That makes sense. I did get my shoes wet that day. I recently read an article that said parts of a child stay inside their mother's body for up to 38 years after they give birth. It's kind of disgusting, right? Yeah. As the youngest of six, I joked with my mom that she was only 1 year away from literally having no child left behind. But the reality is that parts of my mother are always inside me. At various points in my life, I might have been embarrassed by her generosity, her loyalty, her protectiveness, and her faithfulness. But now all I feel is gratitude and admiration. This woman who has made raising six children, 13 grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, her primary focus in life, has given all of us so much to live up to. And who knows? Maybe someday I will confidently march into one of my children's classrooms and threaten bodily harm to their teacher. That is, after all, what Mexican mothers do.
And we're back from the live clip. Oh my God, that was amazing.
I cannot listen to that enough.
It's one of my favorite stories of all time. It really is. I laugh with it every time. And again, such a tribute to your mom and your relationship with your mom. How is she doing today? This has been a couple years since you shared that story. What's changed? How did this event and this story impact your relationship with her?
Well, when I did, that's what she said, my dad had just been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And so that was another reason it was really great to do this sort of tribute to my mom, because I wanted, she was doing a lot of caretaking, her world, he had been sick for a while before that, and her world just kind of stopped, and she's always been a caretaker, but it kind of went to the next level, and she was really took care of him. He lived longer than we anticipated because of her care, no doubt, and all of his doctors confirmed that. But ultimately, he did pass, and so it has been about 3 years, almost 4 years since I spoke, and it's been a little over 2 years since my dad passed away. So her life has changed dramatically, most of which revolves around the fact that she no longer has her life partner. They were married almost 50 years. But also just in that it changed a lot of her kind of focus and priority in life. And she really, while she still gives to her family, she said that one of the things she realized was she decided she did need to take a little bit better care of herself. And so she has taken time to, for the first time in her life, it might have taken her 75 years, but she is now doing a better job of that, doing what she wants to do, going where she wants to go, spending her time how she wants to spend it. And it's been really great to watch that. We're very fortunate in that even though she lives 5 hours away from here, she spends a week a month here with my family and me.
Does she still show up unannounced and surprise you?
No longer unannounced. Now that she's traveling solo, she's been banned from the unannounced visits. We need to know where she, if she's going to be on the highways driving across 3 states, we need to know that information.
You can use, you know, technology available
but
to
she
you.
She still shows up with a cooler full of food.
Oh, of course.
She still has, you know, all of her containers full of this, that, and the other. So none of that has changed. Her faith is, if anything, deeper than ever. There's definitely, you know, we know that there's usually 2 Sundays that she's with us, the Sunday she arrives and the Sunday she leaves. And she usually gets here in the afternoon, and she leaves in the morning. So the first Sunday she gets here in the afternoon, the second Sunday she leaves in the morning. And, you know, both times it's, how was Mass this morning? And the other time it's, you're getting ready for Mass now.
You're
right?
On your way, yes.
Yeah, of course I am.
I love that.
We all need an accountability partner in life, and there it is.
Oh, yeah, she's definitely my religious accountability partner. So, but she, you know, she's doing really well. I just had dinner with a friend last night, and she saw my mom last week, and she said, I have to say, she looks really good. And I think she does. She is getting back to herself and adjusting to her new normal.
And you no longer need to have a GPS tracker to know when she's when she's coming down the highway.
We're an hour away.
Exactly. good time.
Well, on a more serious note, how are you doing in the life on the bigger scale? There is a lot going on with Mexican families right now, and
absolutely,
with immigration and culture. Is that something that you're involved with?
Well, you know, it is beyond heartbreaking. I mean, certainly it is angering and it is frustrating. Doesn't really do it justice to say that. I mean, it is infuriating what's happening and how it's happening. But honestly, for me personally, knowing the family dynamics of the Mexican culture, it takes it really to another level internally for me. And, you know, I can't speak for other cultures. I can't speak for other families. And so, you know, some people may say, oh, well, my family's close too. And it's not just Mexican families that have, you know, close family ties. And that's fine. But I know I can only speak from my own background. And what I know is that really all of my friends, all of my family, you know, all of my kind of extended circle in my life have always, my whole life, commented on the closeness of my family and how unusual and unique that is. Mm-hmm. And the depth of it. I mean, just the fact that, you know, I mean, my mom doesn't go a day without speaking to all 5 of her daughters.
Oh, that is amazing.
And And, you know, she sees the two that live close to her several times a week. She sees the one that lives in Hawaii. She goes and stays with her for 6 weeks every year. She's here 1 week a month with me. I mean, this is who she is. And so that's what informs me. And so for me to think about the separation, that's the part that's the hardest, is just thinking about, and I know it's hard for everybody to imagine, but thinking of how dehumanized these individuals have become. And at the core, we're talking about mothers and babies, daddies and babies being separated from one another.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah.
Well, it's just too much.
I think that when people say, well, my family's close too, then the next sentence should be, so I can totally empathize with mm-hmm. the horror of what that would be. My kiddos were leg clingers, you know, whether it was first day of swim class yes. or kindergarten or whatever. And that was just because they had to go and spend 6 hours in the classroom, not because of anything any more traumatic than that. And so I remember
exactly.
How gut-wrenching that very minor situation was. So I can't even imagine what those parents are going through.
And I want to thank you for sharing your perspective, as you can relate to the culture that these families are coming yeah. from and how it has an impact on you even this far away, you know, just knowing how your family would react in a similar situation. But also to point out the fact that, you know, the story that you shared several years ago on the stage, you know, continues to have relevancy and impact in your life. And now it has a whole new layer as we share it with a new group of women, a new audience, mm-hmm. that women are going to hear new things and take new things out of it. And it's going to have a deeper meaning because of what's happening in current events. And that is the power of creating safe space for women to share their stories so that your story can be heard and people can find power in it, the warmth in it, the connection in it, no matter what's going on in the world.
One of the things that Absolutely. We often say about the stories that we choose to be told on the stage is we want it to be two-sided. We want it to be the old analogy that it's like a mirror and a window. So we want mm-hmm. someone up there to reflect back to everyone in the audience, I connect to a Me Too moment. And we also want a story to be a window so that somebody can see life from a different perspective. And then mm-hmm. maybe not today, tomorrow, or next week, but then they will recall that story when something happens later and connect to that.
Oh, I still get so many women who've seen it and talk about it. There's one woman in particular who always asks how my mom is every time I see her. She's never met my mom. And she always asks every time I see her, how's your mom, Becca? Oh, my goodness. I think about that story all the time. She's very close with her mother. But, you know, it is. I love that. A window and a mirror, because it's mm-hmm. so true. I mean, there's so much to look and see and learn from others. But then also the reflection that, my God, we are not that different and we are all in this together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's all about. Right, Rosso? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I feel like we need to give you, you know, you're on the phone right now, but if you could see me, I'm going to just stand up and give you a standing ovation because you
I
really
know.
Do change your community. You
oh, I thought
are.
You were going to say hug.
Well, group okay. Hug. I'm going to hug the microphone. I'm not, but just pretend I am. It's getting creepy up in here. But thank
Ow,
you.
Harry.
You do. Sorry, Jeanette.
It's my arm.
You are someone who just makes a huge impact on your community, and we are very grateful that you shared it from our stage.
Yes, thank you so much for
giving
of your heart, your time, your voice, and your story. Tune in next week when we'll share another story live from the stage of That's What She Said, hopefully coming soon to a community near you. Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of The She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives. Learn more at sterlingwealthmanagement.com.